It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town, a dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Woohoo! All right, so there's a lot in the stack today. And I'm going to be honest, some of it we're just going to kick to Monday. A couple that I just can't do on a Friday here. Important stories that I just can't do today.
Yeah, we don't want to kill the mood.
Yeah, and so we have to go back to Dan Weinbaum's newscast. I saw this.
What's in the rug?
Yeah, I saw the story overnight and thought, wait, what? Explain what happened, and then I'm going to pull up a photo. To get a better understanding.
It's amazing that we never talked about this, but apparently we have all seen this. This woman in Ohio, it was on TikTok and probably on Reels and all this other stuff. This woman in Ohio was digging in her yard and found a rug and apparently something in it, she thought, and everyone told her to call the cops. And so they came.
Wait, she took this to the internet. She found a rug in her backyard. And
yes.
Instead of thinking, like, that's odd, there's a rug here,
well,
she immediately jumped to dead body rolled up in rug. And
right.
Then the online community went, call 911.
The internet, of course, you know, reinforced all of that because...
Because anytime there's
does.
A rug that's been buried, it automatically is filled with a body, of course.
I mean, yeah. And so the cops came. Huh, look at that. Then they came back with some what they call homicide dogs or cadaver dogs.
Okay.
And the dogs hit on the spot. And, of course, this is all fodder for, you know, internet video stuff. And then apparently the cops are like, yeah, there's nothing going on here.
I think this thing has had like 600 bajillion views or something, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think here's the deal, you guys. Here's one of the tweets. I'm invested. We all collectively are watching too much investigative discovery. We're all collectively watching too much Dateline, where a rug just can't be a rug. A rug now all of a sudden, what, you think there was a mob hit in your backyard?
Yeah. Of course, duh.
Why didn't she unroll it or dig underneath it more to see if there was a body or
well,
not?
Well, Dan, would you be the one, want to be the one that found the skeleton?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I want to read the transcript of her 911 call.
I mean, I would finish the thing before I got the cops.
I don't
involved.
Know if she annoys me or she's my hero. This is the transcript of the 911 call. It says, and I quote, "Hey, this could be the dumbest call you get today, but there's a rug in the ground." Two police officers arrived at her home in 15 minutes. The officer told her it was strange, but it's going to take more time to investigate. She tracked down the daughter of the couple who formerly owned the home, and that person said, I don't have any idea why there's a rug in the backyard, but promised to ask her elderly parents about it. Now we're pulling in elderly parents.
Now, wait a minute. This lady's a content creator, right?
Well, if she wasn't before, she is now.
So how difficult would it be?
Here comes the conspiracy, Sam.
I don't know. Cut your finger and dabble some blood all over a rug. And then bury it in your backyard.
Uh-huh.
And then, I don't know, like 3-4 months later when October hits, because it's spooky season and everybody wants to know about some
Ooh.
Crime or some sort of something nefarious that went on, you then go out into your backyard and say, oh my God, I was digging and I found a rug.
So it could be a hoax.
I believe this thing has 9 million views. It was updated 2 hours ago. She was asking for a psychic to come to her house. 3 hours ago, the digging paused. 2 hours ago, she asked for a psychic to come to the house, and all I see in the text is there is no body. That's what. Now, to your point, Dan, as they're shoveling and digging, I don't know that I would want to dig a lot further down after.
It's my yard. It's just a rug. Huh. Wonder why that's here. Let me dig some more.
Yeah, no. You know. I'm not.
Does she typically just film herself while digging in her yard? Is that part of her content creation?
I think they found it, and then they were like, okay, wait a minute. Let's film this. What is that down there?
Fortunately,
doesn't pass the smell test.
We have been able to inform everybody that that viral video that we all saw and were wondering about, there's nothing to it.
All right. We are going to switch gears.
I hate to poke holes in it. Sorry, guys.
I know. And just know that the conversation that's coming, we tried to get every psychiatrist and every attorney.
Did we strike out?
We tried and tried and tried. And Dana does not ever strike out when it comes to getting the interview. I just don't.
I called 18 phone numbers.
Like, I called
today.
In favors. It is a Friday. We could not find anyone that really had the skill set to do this. We just couldn't. So if you missed the bulletin breaking news alert last night, I sat up and screamed when I saw this. It was from the New York Times, and it says, Los Angeles District Attorney says he is reviewing the Menendez case. Thank God.
About time.
Those boys are victims. If you have not watched the original Netflix documentary, and I rewatched it last night.
Yeah, you're not talking about the one that's titled Monsters but the other one.
Or whatever. No, not watch the new crap. Although some of the new crap is what led the DA, like, look, enough attention's being paid to this. We need to go back and look at it. Those boys are victims, capital V. Interest in the Menendez brothers has intensified, writes the New York Times, after the release of the latest Netflix drama, and a separate documentary is forthcoming. But George Gascon, the LADA, said this week that his office is reviewing the decades-old case involving Eric and Lyle Menendez, who we know shotgun blasted their parents to death in their Beverly Hills home many years ago and were sentenced to life in prison. But I'm going to go over, when we get back, some of the facts of this case that you may have forgotten. First of all, there were really three trials. The first two in tandem and separately ended in a hung jury.
Yeah.
And they go back, Sam, and they speak to the jurors. And the hung jury was split right down gender lines, with the women very much believing that this was manslaughter. There's never been a question whether or not the boys shot their parents. They did.
Absolutely. They didn't even deny it.
The women wanted manslaughter. The men in the room could not fathom that a father could molest his own sons. We have so much more education and so much more knowledge about what rape looks like and can look like behind the white picket fence. That I will remind you, people back then could not wrap their arms around the fact that a very wealthy, successful
and it was disguised family, by the
family that had everything,
perfect family,
that behind those doors could be a house of horrors, which it was. So we're going to talk about the update coming up. Talk about the role the media played in this, because the media did play an enormous role in what happened to those boys. And we're going to talk about it straight ahead. 913-586-7798. And for the love, if you're a psychiatrist and you can phone in and be part of this discussion, we would love to have your thoughts on how the conversations have changed over the years. I think now we understand that these things happen in America. They do happen behind closed doors. They do happen in the shadows. And they do happen from wealthy families in Beverly Hills. We're back with much more straight ahead. Stick with us. You know, I mentioned when the new show came out, I have not watched it because I don't think it's accurate. The new show is called Monsters, I think, or Monster. And I have long said that can be taken one of two ways. Because if you ask me who was the monster
Right.
Were the boys the monsters, or was Jose Menendez the monster? Jose Menendez was the monster.
I believe it's called Monsters, but I have not seen it either, so I could be wrong.
One of the things that I had forgotten until last night, and I went back and watched the original documentary about this. How many family members of the deceased, Jose and Kitty Menendez, testified that they knew or had been confided in about the sexual abuse? During the first trial, a parade of family members came in and testified under oath that the boys had told them, starting as young as age 8 or 9, they didn't know how to verbalize the word molestation.
Right.
Or,
well, they didn't know what it was.
Sex. They didn't know what it was. Yeah. But as early as age 8 or 9, they had verbalized to family members that these things were happening.
And if they're willing to come in and it's their direct family member who is now deceased and speak on behalf of the boys, saying that there might be a deeper story here.
Oh, there always was a deeper story there, Sam.
That says a lot.
The only thing that bothered me about the prosecutor coming out saying we're going to review it, and yes, it's an election year, I know that. The only thing that bothered me is they said they were reviewing new evidence. No, they're not. That evidence was always there. The difference is the judge in the first trial allowed it. The judge during the retrial would not allow the testimony about years of horrifying sex abuse in that house. So when you take that out, all you have are two wealthy, good-looking young men who shotgun blasted their parents to death. Of course that's murder.
And is that a massive flaw in our judicial system that they are allowed to just remove that evidence? I mean, we look at the Scott Peterson trial.
I would argue back then it was a flaw. And today, this would never have happened this way today.
Yeah. And we look at the Scott Peterson trial and the evidence that they were physically unable to drop a body out of a boat. And that evidence was not allowed in the trial.
Diane Vandermolen is one of the relatives who testified. She said she spent summers living with the Menendez family. And by the way, said Jose Menendez was a terrifying human being. She testified at the brothers' first trial that Lyle confided in her about the sex abuse in the summer of 1976. Lyle was just 8 years old. She would have been 17. One night I was in my room changing my bed and Lyle came in. He came very serious and asked me if he could sleep in the other bed next to mine, saying he was afraid to sleep in his own bed because his father, fill in the blanks.
Oh,
afterwards, she said she told the mother what Lyle had said. And there it goes again and again and again. Everyone says dad was doing this. Mom knew it, but was not about to give up the life they enjoyed behind the white picket fence in Beverly Hills.
Well, and I'm sure mom was like, oh, yeah, you know, no, nothing crazy is going on.
I want to be clear, Sam. The boys killed that man and that woman. No question about it. Did they go out and spend money on a Rolex?
I was going to say, it also certainly didn't look good that they went out and spent a
100%
chunk of the fortune.
They went out and started spending their parents' money after those murders. Did it look really bad? Yes. Did the media absolutely glob onto that and run with the theory that these were just two rich kids that wanted to blow their parents away for the inheritance? What I would say, even as young as they were going to inherit that money anyway. They already had anything they wanted in life except safety and a secure place to stay. Why would you do something so obviously reckless if you really were just doing that for the money?
Well, and it makes sense that the media clung to that storyline because it happens to be the most interesting.
Go back. I'm just telling you, over the weekend, go back and watch the very first documentary. And I do think it will paint a very different picture of what was going on back then. Now, is this political that they are looking at this case again? It probably has something to do with it. Probably.
I mean, definitely more documentaries coming out about it puts another eye on it. And maybe some of the people in the prosecutor's office today weren't even really well versed on the details of the case and dug into it and realized, wait a minute, there might be something here.
Relatives also testified under oath that the brothers would also fight over who got to sleep in bed with their mom when their father was not home. This is when Lyle was 15, Eric would have been 12, and Jose wasn't home that night. The two of them would argue over who had to sleep with mom. I always thought it was strange, she testified. They were already teenagers, but again, because it was Kitty, I never questioned it.
Wait, had to or got to?
Had to, Sam.
So does that paint yes, the that image is, yes. that mom
we
was also?
We won't say it, but okay. That is the image that was painted.
All right.
And so, look, do I think they should be in prison? Yeah, I think they should have served some time. It would shock you the number I threw out last night, but I'm going to say it. I said 5 years. 5 years.
And they got life?
They were facing the death penalty at one point, Sam.
Before California decided that wasn't something they did.
No better today. 913-586-7798. We are back with much more straight ahead on Dana and Parks.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
So, interesting story that's been going on about a week, I believe. Sam, help me out here. Have you heard about the tenant strike over living conditions in Kansas City? We talk about strikes from time to time. God knows we talked about the port strike.
Which has been suspended has until been January
sort
15th.
Of suspended. So stop running out and buying toilet paper and paper towels. Like
by the way,
world's coming
to
an end.
I have to go back and apologize to all of the railroad strikers out there, because I said when we first brought this up earlier this week that the dock workers were not asking for a massive raise like the railroad workers were. The railroad workers got a 30% raise when all was said and done. The dock workers got a 62% raise.
Well, but you know that what the dock workers are really looking at, Sam, is not necessarily wages. It is. But
it's losing their jobs altogether.
Losing their jobs
to
automation. Yeah. And I don't know that they're going to win that fight, quite frankly, when other countries are already using robots.
I mean, economically, it doesn't make sense.
Correct.
I hate to say that, but
I think if I had a crystal ball, I think they will get the wage increase. They are going to lose the fight over
switching to computers. I mean, currently, as Chris Keel told us, they're using 3x5 note cards
with pencils.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
but
that's
here
a,
locally,
that's an uphill fight.
It started October 1st. The KC tenants organized two separate apartment buildings, the tenants of two separate apartment buildings.
Yep.
They unionized and they voted to strike starting October 1st, withholding rent from those property owners.
So it's around $830 per, but you start adding up all of the rents and all of the tenants who should be paying rent.
They said it was roughly $60,000 for the month of October.
Yeah. 60 grand for 1 month. And they are doing this. I don't want to say that they are working with HUD or the Federal Housing Finance Authority, but they have informed the feds we are doing this if our safety demands are not met by October 1st. This is not one of the rent is too high.
No, these are the cheapest apartment complexes in the city
because of the conditions
they offer. Yeah.
Now, the FHFA has warned them, as you can imagine, that failure to pay rent could lead to penalties or evictions. But I think if you unionized and you are all banded together and you're like, we're going to withhold 60 grand until you fix this, I sort of see them finding some success here, Sam. What are they going to do, kick everybody out?
They're going to sell the building.
You think they'll like that? They'll just sell the building?
Easily. They've done it before. They'll do it again.
Oh, come on.
So that's one of the reasons that they said that they can't get anything fixed at the Independence Towers building is because
the child died?
Yes. The city will come in and they will try to enforce updated coding. And they will say, we understand that, you know, you had these windows back when it was code efficient to have these windows. The codes have been updated. You need to replace these windows with windows that kids can't fall out of to their death from the eighth floor. And once they would finally get some ground with those owners, the owner of that building would put it up for sale. Another massive conglomerate would buy it.
And then you have to start all over.
And the same problems would happen.
And you have to start all over.
Yep.
So what's more expensive, withholding, you know, $60,000 or $80,000 in rent for 1 month, or retrofitting that building with windows? And my guess is it's more expensive to retrofit the building with windows.
Absolutely. It's more expensive to retrofit the building with proper plumbing for fire suppression systems. There's so many complaints, the mold, the bugs, the rats, the whole nine. They would have to basically go in and gut these buildings and start from the ground up. And it would mean something if this were like a local owner, like, say, you know, Jim Bob, who lives down the street, owns this building and takes care of it for everybody. But it's not. These are massive hedge funds that own these buildings that make a living off of owning low income apartment buildings. And when something goes wrong, they put it up for sale and another one buys it.
So this summer, Independence Tower tenants told Channel 41 they did not have air conditioning. They were dealing with an intentionally set fire that impacted 27 different units.
That fire was set on the second floor, took out the second, third, and fourth floors of that building.
Union was established, by the way, on May 2nd. We will keep our eye on that story and let you know what ends up happening. I have never heard of apartment dwellers unionizing. And maybe in New York or some bigger cities, that's more common than it is here. But in all of my years covering Kansas City, I've never heard of an entire group of apartment tenants unionizing and striking.
I read that it was the first of its kind to strike.
Wow. Wow. I don't know that this is a first of its kind lawsuit, but it's something we're going to talk about today. And this case is out of Topeka and our friends over at the Topeka Capital Journal. A woman is suing Topeka police, claiming she shouldn't have been shot while a hostage.
Oh, the story is wild.
What in the Sam Hill happened? Topeka police negligently shot a woman twice as she was being held hostage by the driver of a car they were chasing during a gun battle in September. Attorneys Kevin Shepard and Ronald Pope filed the two-count civil suit September 26 against Topeka. On behalf of Christy Mendez, who said police shot her once each in a calf and a knee as she was being held hostage by now dead Eric Perkins. So the driver is dead.
Right.
She survived. Name as co-defendants or Topeka police officers, both. This is a Topeka case, so I'm not going to name all of them. And then three other unnamed officers identified as John Does. Mendez is asking for damages in excess of $75,000. The complaint's first count alleges the city and the officers were responsible for her being shot without just cause. It alleges the officers were guilty of gross negligence, recklessness, and wanton conduct.
Now, she was in the car because she had been abducted by Perkins.
I want to be clear. She was a victim of this idiot Perkins, who's now dead.
So Perkins had shot two people. One of them died, and he grabbed her. Gardner and Perkins were boyfriend and girlfriend at the time. He grabbed her and hopped in the car and took off. And police were trying to catch up to him. He was armed and dangerous. He had already shot two people. You had mentioned that it was a rolling gun battle, so gunfire was clearly being exchanged between the driver and now police, and she was struck twice in the crossfire, for lack of a better term.
So the guy who's now dead was alleged to have said right before the gun battle, everyone's going to die today. So he's ready to go out in a blaze of glory is how I read this, okay? She says, during the subsequent car chase and gun battle, I was scared for my life. Her brother, who saw what happened, called 911 and reported it. One of the officers driving a marked patrol car subsequently tried to pull that car over, and a high-speed chase ensued. During this chase, now-dead Perkins pulled out a pistol and began firing shots through the back window and outside the driver's window toward the police car. The officer continued to pursue the car and could tell there was a passenger in the passenger seat.
But at the time, and I'm, you know, I'm not the, taking wait, sides in wait, this, but they don't know who let me is finish. Shooting.
The defendant soon began returning fire while still driving. All right, I'm going to stop right there.
Wait, the defendant was returning
the
fire?
The defendant is the police officer.
Oh, sorry.
The defendant police officer in this civil case started firing while returning fire while still driving the car. Okay. If, in fact, that is true, she wins. She wins this lawsuit, Sam. You know how I feel about police chases. You want to add rolling gun battle through traffic to this? Through downtown Topeka? Are you kidding me? Do we know what time this was? Not that it would ever be acceptable. It's not.
It does not
say. Now, part of the lawsuit says she was the victim of a kidnapping, and despite that, she was placed in handcuffs by the officers.
It was in the morning.
I hate to say this, that the officers, to your point at the time, Sam,
had no idea that she was a victim.
Didn't know she was a hostage.
Correct. And so they thought maybe she's the one firing the shots. To your point, they saw that there was a second person in the vehicle, but they have no idea. All they see or hear, quite frankly, is a gun going off, and they have knowledge that there are bullets striking the ground in their direction.
Man.
And so they are returning fire.
If, in fact, this was a rolling gun battle involving police while they were chasing this car,
by the way,
she is going to win that lawsuit.
This was not a constant police chase. It was stop and go. There were times where the car stopped and the now dead suspect was shooting from a more controlled position at officers, and officers were returning fire.
But what do the rules say? We're not in Hollywood.
You're not allowed to shoot out of a moving vehicle.
I'm asking, if you are a police officer, what do the rules say about firing while you are driving out of your squad car? There is no way department policy allows that.
So what are they supposed to do in a situation when you have a guy who just killed someone, shot another, and is now running?
Even I would say, as angry as I am about most police chases, even I would say that is imminent danger, imminent threat, you chase.
Yeah.
Even I would say that.
And he's firing at police now. It's a tough one.
Hello?
I think she does have a case, though. I think she's going to get her $75,000.
We are not going to make this next story a topic. I am just passing on because the court civil arm of this horrifyingly sad story has come to an end. The Prairie Village family involved in the let's continuously put this child on hold while mom is dying in the house. Remember that, Sam?
I do.
The settlement is over.
They got Kansas City 911. Yep,
a Prairie Village family has settled one of the largest 911 response delay wrongful death lawsuits in United States history against Kansas City, Missouri for $4,125,000.
And this was one of the situations where the child knew all of the information that they needed to know. There are times when kids call 911 and don't know their address. They don't know what's going on.
He did everything right. The poor buddy, my God. 40-year-old Catherine McClelland, mother of two, a 40-year-old nurse, by the way, was getting her two young children ready for camp July 18th, 2019, when she collapsed from cardiac arrest. The little buddy, the 8-year-old, pick up her cell phone, called 911, and they have all of these records. He says, I'm an only child with my little sister, and my mom is laying on the ground, and my dad is out of town. Quoting here from dad, he did everything right. He was clear. He was concise. He acted heroically. He gave all the correct information to the call taker. Despite that, my God, they just kept asking the kid, are you sure? Can you spell Belinder? Let's try to transfer you. They bounced back and forth.
Can you spell Belinder?
Oh, God, it's terrible. And can I just say this one more time? Belinder is two freaking streets west of State Line Road. There is no one in Kansas City, Missouri that lives along that corridor that doesn't know what Belinder is.
But they got the 911 system.
Belinder, Mission Road.
They got the 911 system on the Missouri side of the state line, and they have to transfer them over.
Despite all of the verification, including calling dad, he's out of town. They said, hey, we've got a child on the phone saying mom is on the ground. And he says, oh, Jesus. He then verifies this is our house. 911 recordings indicate it was another 5 minutes before a supervisor in Kansas City placed a call to Johnson County MedAct to check and see if the ambulance was on the way. It wasn't. by the way. Quoting here, checking on the 7340 blender to make sure you guys have that address, the supervisor said. Reply, I don't have any calls there. After that explanation, 13 minutes and 14 seconds after the boy's call was answered, they started to send an ambulance. Nearly 20 minutes after the boy was connected with Kansas City police, paramedics arrived. She was brain dead. $4,125,000, and I guarantee you everyone in that family would say, we don't want a dime. That amount of money makes us sick.
We want our mom back.
We want mom back. And the problem has not gotten better in Kansas City. As you know, the problem has gotten worse. I don't know what to do, Sam. We've talked about the delayed 911 response until we're blue in the face. And literally, there was a mom who gave birth to a child who was blue in the face at home a couple of weeks ago. Child almost died. Waiting 20 minutes to get through 911. I don't know how they fix this.
She walked outside.
It is critically that they fix it. Yeah. It is critical that they fix that problem.
They said they were going to have a fix in 18 months.
God bless that family. Just absolutely awful. And part of the plan, as part of this settlement, they want quality control, and they're calling it Catherine's Code. That KCPD will now randomly check 50 911 calls each month to determine whether they were handled properly. Catherine left behind her husband, her 8-year-old son, and 3-year-old daughter. We're back with more straight ahead. Welcome on back to Dana and Parks. Scott will be back on Monday. A couple of mail-related stories to pass along to you. Millions of dollars in IRS refund checks sent through the mail were stolen in a massive fraud. Please do direct deposit. The check is not in the mail. Tax filers who opted to get their IRS refunds sent to their homes said the checks never arrived. That's because they were stolen.
Why does anybody do that?
I don't know. The massive fraud cost millions of dollars, according to a report. More than 200 taxpayers who were expecting refund checks ranging from a few hundred dollars, oh God, to as much as $500,000. Who gets a refund of $500,000 and then asks someone to put that in snail mail?
Teach me your ways.
Good God. Just in Staten Island, the 218 cases they've looked at there include a fraud of $3.8 million. One of her constituents had to reissue their request to the IRS 4 times before receiving the refund check. My God, Bennett Grimm's a victim, says he was expecting a check for $96,000, which the IRS owed him after he sold his medical practice. The check never arrived. I'm telling you, when you're talking about amounts that start with things like 9 or 1.
Let's just go ahead and put that straight into the business
account.
Why would
you mail that?
Yeah.
Why? And then locally out of Leavenworth, a 56-year-old ding-a-ling from Leavenworth has been sentenced on a charge related to mail theft there. Today, a judge sentenced Scott P. Cordell to 11 months in the Kansas Department of Corrections for the charge of attempted theft. I don't understand that because they found the mail in his car. But he's getting 11 months. According to court documents, Cordell was a passenger inside of an SUV that was observed driving on the wrong side of the road and stopping at mailboxes.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here. When they performed the traffic stop, they found mail that didn't belong to Cordell or the driver in the back seat. The woman driving was also sentenced back in July.
Okay, we've heard of the trust fall, and we've heard of other really – the trust fall is a good one, but other really dumb trends on social media, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a new one going around apparently on TikTok. I don't know. I haven't seen it. Called the trust him trend. And apparently, these female influencers are grabbing their boyfriend, and they're standing in the middle of a roadway, and they're filming themselves while their boyfriend drives at them at a ridiculously high rate of speed and then slams on the brake, in theory, to stop right before hitting them.
Right.
Well, we have a woman in Australia whose name I won't give you because she deserves no additional publicity, who didn't have a boyfriend, so she grabbed one of her male friends and said, hey, you've got a pretty cool car. I'm going to stand in the middle of this street in my crop top and my shorts and my high heels, and I'm going to video myself while you drive at me at 60 miles an hour and slam on the brakes.
Okay.
Well, she had seen other people do this, and they all stopped in time, and nobody got hurt.
Do you Do you ever wonder whether or not we deserve exactly what is happening in America and beyond?
You can see where this is going.
No, I don't even need to know. Did he hit her? I assume he hit her.
He didn't stop in time. And her left leg was entirely under the vehicle as she screamed, stop, stop, stop.
Right.
Please back up, which is not what she said. She used other words. And she then got up and realized that she was in a lot of pain. It was a fractured ankle. She spoke to a news outlet.
No.
And they said, do you regret your decision? And she said, no. It turned out to be pretty good content.
I sometimes think we are too dumb to be here. I really do.
Yeah.
Sort of a heartwarming slash we need your help slash what is the most expensive thing meaningful to you, not dollar amount, meaningful to you that you have ever lost? Why one woman is offering, and this is local, $1,000 for a missing sweatshirt.
And we are just 1 hour away from Festivus Friday, brought to you by Q39. Get your Q fix today at Q39KC.com.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.